Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Quick disclosure, this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing I say constitutes direct investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell any securities. It represents my personal views at the time of the recording, and markets may perform differently than I expect. All investment involves risk, including loss of principal. With that said, let's get into it. I have to really wonder how many people in America really know what the Fed is actually in the business of doing. What exactly is Fed credit anyway? What is high-powered or base money supply? So simply stated, it is primary dealer credit that is used by these financial institutions for the liquidity that is needed to back lending and to purchase assets. I'm going to say it one more time. Primary dealer credit, which is what the Fed creates, is used by banks, primarily the primary dealers. That is the liquidity that is needed to back its lending and to purchase bonds and stocks, to gamble in Wall Street. The Fed's fiat money, that credit, is created by decree using electronic keystrokes. It is not backed by anything but the faith in our government to keep its purchasing power intact, which at a loss of 97%+, I would dare to say that they could not have done a worse job at it. $1 back in 1913, when the Fed was first created, that horrible day, that horrible year, now has the equivalent purchasing power of less than 3 cents, 3 pennies. Is this kind of destruction with our money still going on? Well, the maniac money printer who's on his way out, who currently runs the Fed, has printed $170 billion since December of last year. That's 4 months ago, when quantitative tightening ended. QT, quantitative tightening, is the Fed's very brief sojourn in the attempt to undo some of the damage done by quantitative easing, the massive expansion of its balance sheet, which is the massive money printing done to enrich banking liquidity, as I said in the first place. Alas, the Fed always fails the few attempts it's ever been tried to unwind its balance sheet very much at all. It can't do it very long at all, because even a marginal reduction in bank liquidity causes markets to fracture. That's how financialized our economy has become. The hopeful appointment of new Fed Chair Kevin Warsh is supposed to finally give Main Street a boost while ending Wall Street's free ride by significantly reducing the Fed's balance sheet, the amount of credit, free excess reserves. Trump makes no secret of his hatred of the current dreadful Chair Powell. Hopefully today was his last FOMC meeting, as I said, and press conference. But if you think the antipathy between Trump and Powell was bad, just wait until you see the battle between Trump and the Warsh Fed. Trump wants rate cuts to happen now and big league, despite elevated inflation and the war in Iran. Of course, Trump wants lower rates to help prevent Congress from turning blue in the midterms, but most importantly, also because the interest paid on our national debt is becoming a real problem. Soaring debt levels and rising rates are a very toxic brew for the solvency of any country. By reducing the Fed's balance sheet, Kevin Warsh will, God willing, shrink the Fed's footprint in the economy and markets. But the short-term effect on markets should be brutal, especially if Warsh is brave enough to shrink the balance sheet to the degree that allows banks to suffer in order to reconcile the imbalances in asset prices and the disparity in classes. The question is, does Trump understand this function? Or will maintaining power trump, excuse the pun, the need to provide a sustainable and viable middle class? We desperately need fiscal discipline in D.C., but the days of Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, now seem light years away. The simple function is that a lower debt burden paves the way for lower interest rates. Fiscal restraint ensures confidence in U.S. sovereign debt, and we need it now more than almost any time in U.S. history. Just as it also engenders lower rates of inflation by keeping the Fed's printing press at bay. But the exact opposite situation is now occurring, and a debt death spiral is in our future. I don't think there's any way of avoiding it. Debt levels are approaching critical mass. Hence, the Fed feels compelled to buy an ever-increasing share of our debt to keep it from having a free market-based rate, a rate that would be much higher if it was not sequestered, if these bonds were not sequestered on the Fed's balance sheet. Nevertheless, this in turn eventually leads to intractable inflation. This is the point in history where we are right now. A direct consequence of that massive increase in base money supply, causing interest rates to rise anyway, despite our central bank's interest rate suppression scheme. As of March 2026, the average interest rate on total marketable debt was 3.36%. However, new T-bills are yielding 3.6%. And the 30-year Treasury, their rate is currently being issued at 4.9%. The U.S. has to issue over $10 trillion of debt in the coming year for rollovers and refinancing, plus $2 trillion in deficit spending. In other words, the cost of financing this debt is surging, and there is a tsunami of this debt that needs to find buyers. We are already paying over $1 trillion in interest on the outstanding debt. That's the third largest expenditure item in our budget, just behind Social Security and Medicare. When you grasp the shocking sum of our $40 trillion national debt, which is 125% of GDP and 720% of revenue, and our $2 trillion annual deficits that existed before the war in Iran, and while GDP growth remained positive outside of a recession, you can truly understand why our government finds it mandatory to push interest rates lower, indeed much lower from where they are now. Otherwise, interest expense will quickly become the most expensive line item in the entire U.S. budget. If interest rates rise to just 6%, we would be paying nearly 50% of our entire revenue just on interest payments. That leaves only enough money for the entitlements of Social Security and Medicare. That means there would be $0 left for national defense, veterans benefits, education, healthcare, unemployment insurance, transportation, law enforcement, border security, environmental protection, nothing, nada, zilcho. Now, is an average interest rate of 6% an unbelievable number to achieve? Not at all. Back in the inflationary times of 1982, the early 80s, the average interest rate on our national debt was 9.8%. So no, it's not impossible. If we were just to go back to that level, the interest on the debt alone would eat up 75% of all federal revenue. That's where we're headed. Of course, we're not at that level yet with inflation only at 3% or 3.3%, not 10%. But remember, inflation was 9% just a few years ago, near 15% during the early 80s, and over 20% in 1917 after World War I. And there are good reasons to believe both rates and inflation are heading back towards double digits unless Warsh is able to pull off a 180-degree turn in our nation's fiscal and monetary trajectories. And yes, he can help steer our fiscal direction by stopping the debt monetization pattern of the past century. He could bring stable prices and disinflation and deflation. He could do it. But it may very well be too late already, even if Mr. Warsh were to stop the QE insanity, which I know he's going to do, and go back into QT. The math laid out already clearly displays the danger involved with the Fed allowing a market-based rate to be applied to our outstanding debt. There's just too much of it out there. Hence, investors should be prepared for dysfunctional bond markets and its spillover effects on other assets, no matter what happens. I want to make a quick point, a very important and quick point before I close this podcast. There are ignorant people who are fond of deriding those that warn about corrections and crashes. They call us Cassandras. As if it were the case that significant market turmoil never happens and crashes are imaginary events. There have been a few major bear markets and many steep corrections since the year 2000. Two of those major crashes saw the benchmark index lose more than half of its value during 2000-2008. Then in 2018 and 2019, we had a repo crisis where stocks dropped by nearly 10% in just the fourth quarter of 18, and overnight borrowing costs spiked to 10% in 2019. We were headed for complete Armageddon if the central bank didn't flood the system with new money back then. In 2020, the major U.S. stock indices plummeted 35% from February 19th to March 23rd due to the COVID pandemic. Then in 2022, the S&P fell 20% for the year after falling 25%, losing a quarter of its value by October, while the NASDAQ plunged about 33% at the same time, a third of its value. Then in April of 2025, Liberation Day tariffs sent the S&P tumbling 12% in just 1 week. I want to make one observation about this time span, this last 25 years, that the corrections are happening more frequently and with a very high degree of intensity. They're happening quicker, more and more frequently, and they're very intense, very quickly. The key point here is not to always be bearish, but to know when it is appropriate to steer out of harm's way. The solution to these occasional collapses is to have a model that accurately identifies the second derivative of inflation and growth. This allows investors to have the ability to participate in bull markets, but also to protect and potentially profit from bear markets as well. The truth is the stock market is the most overvalued in history. Do not ignore history or the facts. At this moment, the market is priced for perfection and for the war to end soon. I don't know why that's the case, but that is the truth. Meanwhile, oil keeps rising and the Strait of Hormuz remains closed. We are not short the market at this time, but we stand protected with a large pile of cash making a good and safe return. We hold commodities related to energy and agriculture and some precious metals. We are not overweight precious metals at this time because interest rates are rising and gold hates rising nominal and real interest rates more than anything else. We also own utilities along with aerospace and defense. The world is getting more dangerous and less cohesive, and the spending on national security must increase. This allocation will change for sure, but for now it provides both protection and flexibility as we patiently wait for a better opportunity to expand our investments in the broader market.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.